Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have not one great guest, but two. Welcome to the show, Kevin and Jonathan Ratner.
Thank you, Victor. Great to be here with you.
Thank you, Victor. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, great to have you here both. One of you is based in LA, one in Cleveland, and you're developers of projects all over the nation. Some very innovative projects, and I'm excited to have this conversation. But before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah, thanks, Victor. I'm going to jump in here. Brevity is not my strong suit, but I'll do my best. So yeah, we're thrilled to be here. We are big fans of the podcast. We just want to get that in there. Kevin and I both cut our teeth in real estate with a company called Forest City, probably familiar to many in your listening audience. Forest City was founded about 100 years ago, almost to the year, but it was sold in 2018 to Brookfield. It was a public company, but it was founded by our grandfather, Max Ratner, and his siblings in Cleveland, Ohio, where, as you mentioned, I'm based. Forest City was run in many ways like a family business. When we were there, we like to say we have public company controls with private company culture and timeline. So that's kind of the background into real estate investing and development that both Kevin and I have. After the sale, along with a third partner of ours, Luke Palmisano, we founded the Max Collaborative. I think it's interesting to note, we founded the company after our grandfather, Max, but in some ways also after Kevin's son, Max. So in other words, we wanted to be emboldened by the past. We want to honor the past, but we don't want to be held back by the past either. So we always acknowledge that we stand on the shoulders of giants in this business, but we're forward-looking. You know, this enterprise is about the future, and I think our real estate and our portfolio speaks to that. So we named the company in part after our family members, and then we chose the word collaborative, which speaks to the culture we're creating. Again, culture, a big part of what ultimately drove the value at Forest City. Beyond the projects and the dollars, it's about the people, we think. Ultimately, comes down to a philosophy that our grandfather, Max, and his siblings instilled in us, which is that we can accomplish more together than we can alone. So we're well into our first cycle of deals. They're all apartments, as you mentioned, and community buildings. We have about 1,500 units. It represents about $800 million of total project cost. And I don't think we could have planned it this way, Victor. We started in 2019. They're all planning to open over the next 12 months. That's just a little bit of twist of fate on that end. A couple real flagship communities, as you referenced, and we're excited to dig into those with you. So that's sort of the background. I think I'm speaking for Kevin as well on sort of how it is that we got to this place.
I love that. And I know that in our pre-recording discussion, we talked about some similar philosophies. I know for our company, it's really all about building communities that people feel compelled to call home. And you didn't use those exact words, but used words that were very similar, and it really stuck with me. So talk a little bit about that, because, you know, it's not just about building stuff, because any GC can do that. And it's not just about maximizing dollars per square foot, because, yeah, you can value engineer things. But it's really about building a product that the market wants, that the market is going to want in 10 and 20 years from now, before that permanent financing runs its course. And you want to make sure that it's going to be something that you want to continue to own.
Yeah, I can speak a little to that. So, we all interact with real estate every day, all day, whether it's retail or residential or where you live or where you walk or where you work. And we believe that doing real estate is worth doing well. And creating community and creating places that inspire people and that people want to be around and feel good when they're in and around is something that's very important to us. And we feel that it helps to drive value. It drives value in that someone is proud of where they're living and wants to have their friends over and show them the place that they're living. But it also drives value in terms of the rents that you maybe can achieve or the longevity that people stay there. Because in apartment living, turnover can be detrimental to the property. So if people stay longer because they're inspired to stay there, either by the building or by the community, but the way that we manage the building and the way that we interact with the property, we believe drives a lot of value.
Well, and I think being differentiated in the market, not just for the sake of being different, but for the sake of standing out in a good way, is part of creating value. A mentor of mine is very fond of saying that when the value is unclear, the discussion always degenerates to price. But if you can't comparison shop, then you stand in a category of one, and to some extent you get to set the price. And I don't mean that in a capitalistic sense, but for those who see the value, they will want that product.
Yeah, and you're talking about some of the fundamentals of real estate investing or investing across any enterprise, but it's about creating lasting value. And what you speak of with the mission or vision or purpose of your company does resonate a lot with us. Those were the lessons that were instilled in us by our forebearers at Forest City that we're carrying forward into the Max Collaborative. But there are very real examples of this investment into quality and into design and thoughtful. It's really about being thoughtful. It's somewhat driven by long-term return aspirations versus very short-term, which I think too much of our built environment has been motivated by over the past, call it two decades. But at Forest City, we did a little bit of everything in terms of the real estate we built, apartments, malls, office buildings, big communities. And we saw, firsthand that when we, starting in about 1990, when we really focused more on urban development and urban redevelopment, that when we did that with an eye towards creating community, making place, investing in sustainable infrastructure, it resulted in higher performing buildings from a value perspective, value to the investor and value to the communities over time. We can get into big philosophical discussions. I don't know if that's what you want to do, but the amount of the built environment that's been put in place in this country over the last 20 years that hasn't been mindful and thoughtful about how it will exist over time and potentially erode over time is at a certain point going to be a big problem for this country and others.
When I think about a lot of the product that's being built today, it's all the same. I call it a three-story woody walk-up.
And yeah. There you go.
I just don't think that people necessarily aspire to that particular product, especially if they're downsizing from a detached home. I mean, who wants to carry their groceries up three flights of stairs? Like, nobody. And so what is the right product? And I've always believed that it's important to design a product with a particular customer in mind. So if you know who that is, then what do they want? Are they going to value, e-commerce delivery lockers, dry and refrigerated in the lobby? Are they going to value electric vehicle charging? Are they going to value a rooftop deck amenity? What are they going to value and design the product for them?
Yeah, meet your market and try to figure out what motivates them, right? And what's going to make them feel comfortable in that home? And what's going to make them want to live in our product as opposed to somebody else's product? Now, we think that design is another one of those aspects, right? Along with all the things that you're mentioning. Because if they're looking for EV charging and you don't have it, they're going somewhere else.
A couple of things I would just add too is I don't want you or your listening audience to think that when Kevin and I talk about purpose building buildings and designing with, sort of architecture and design in mind, that it's necessarily all luxury and top end. Because a cynic could very easily say, yeah, well, if you build for the long term and you are designing at that end, then you don't have to make those hard decisions that we all have to make about matching product and market. So we're matching product and market, and we do have some of that product that you refer to, sort of the lower density four story. But even when we do that, we do it in a mindful way. And I think that's part of what differentiates us. And part of those things that I just want to make sure we get in, and it's maybe a topic that feels trite for you and your listening audience, is the sustainability aspect. And when I was at Forest City, going all the way back to 2005-06, I became our vice president of sustainability. I believe I was the first C-suite sustainability executive of a public real estate company in the country. And I don't say that just to sort of establish credential for myself, but just it's fundamental to the way Kevin and I and Luke want to execute this business. And what do we mean by that? It's evolved over time. It started as lead compliant. I give U.S. Green Building Council a ton of credit for sort of moving the industry. Now, a lot of it is about occupant wellness and sort of the health and well-being of your occupants, which are great. Almost this notion of biophilia, which is that people are inherently more happy and more comfortable when they're immersed in nature. And that was the basis of design, if you will, for One River North, which is one of our really exciting communities that we're eager to talk to you about.
So for the listeners who aren't familiar with WELL, this is all about making sure that products that are used in the construction are not going to off-gas toxins for the next year and all of those sorts of things, right?
Yeah, and there's Well Certified. We're actually using a different program called Fitwell, but they both are really focused on sort of like indoor air quality, environment. They all still have their sort of standard performance levels around recycling and energy and water efficiency as LEED does. But yeah, exactly those kinds of things, Victor.
I love it. So there's this myth out there that designing things that are energy efficient or even that are aesthetically pleasing has to cost a ton more. And it can, absolutely. You know, the sky's the limit in terms of what you can spend. But in my experience, it doesn't have to. How do you make those value engineering trade-offs?
I mean, that's a great question, Victor. And I believe that it starts with setting the goal, right? So we say we want to be Fitwell certified. We say we want to deliver a product that is going to meet a certain level. And give that to the architect, give that to the contractor, set that level at the beginning. And then as you go through the process, decisions are made early. Because if you don't make the decisions early, things like siting the property, how does the sun affect the heat, you know, coming into the units? All of those kinds of decisions have large impacts and don't necessarily need to cost any more. Just to be thoughtful and to know up front that that's the goal can really help you deliver a lot of the benefits without necessarily having to incur a lot of costs.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things we're definitely seeing is ever more stringent energy codes. In a lot of cases, that is driving cost. For example, there's no doubt about it. You know, a 19 SEER heat pump is going to cost you a whole lot more than a 12 SEER heat pump. At a certain point, it becomes an exercise in diminishing returns. But again, the sky's the limit in terms of cost. That too is an exercise also in value engineering, all of the different energy components and how they play together. Where do you come down on that? How do you balance that?
We've both been at this a long time, as have you and your audience. And it's interesting in some ways that the conversation hasn't really progressed that much since I started doing this in the early 2000s. But, you know, how do you provide the cost benefit for things that are thought of as additive? What's interesting, though, the part of the conversation that has changed a lot, I listened to a recent podcast of yours where you discussed this, is the energy codes, the National Energy Code and the versions of that that are been adopted across jurisdictions, like Denver as an example, has a really superior building code. So what that means, or energy code. So what that means is that's just like table stakes for the developers. Everybody's got to build to that level. You're not adding costs at that point. It's just a question of do the other costs to construct your building divided by the rent, multiplied by your debt, you know, can you get a project that's financeable and that you want to go forward with? So a lot of it is just like the market has moved. A lot of those kinds of things, just to get to a very high level performance of your building, is just the minimal expectation. And if not by the jurisdiction having authority, by the resident. The resident wants to be comfortable. They know more about what leads to that in terms of the air quality, the humidification, the velocity, the controllability, you know, all of those things. So the market's moved a lot while the conversation has kind of stalled in terms of that cost benefit. It's just different on every project. There's no panacea, but overall, I think our buildings have really improved. And I'm sure that the science and the data backs that up in terms of the envelope and the overall energy sort of consumption. Now, overall, that's not solving our carbon problem, if that's where you're leading. But I do recall a conversation I had with Peter Calthorpe. If you know Peter, one of the great planners in working today, and we were working on a big master plan of the old Stapleton Airport in Denver.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Park. And I was young and kind of, you know, eager, and I got the opportunity to interface with Peter, and I was all about green building and sustainability. And he said, you know, I started as an architect and I moved to a planner. And I said, why'd you do that? Peter said, because really it's not about what you build, it's about where you build. And I do believe that. You know, the more our country can focus on urban centers, density, reduce vehicle mile traveled, reduce proximity of housing to jobs, all those kinds of things, the better our long-term climate outlook is going to be in terms of the built environment. I don't think we can building science our way out of this issue, is what I'm saying.
I agree with that. Absolutely. And there's no question that intensification, while some people decry the density, intensification mm-hmm. actually is more energy efficient when you look at the big picture. There's no question about that.
New York City is one of the greenest, most energy efficient sort of on a per occupant basis of any city in the world. Then that's a great test case.
Sure, sure.
One of the things that I see a lot is a lot of municipalities going away from using gas. So what they call electrification, right? Electrify Denver or electrify Los Angeles, whatever it is. And those that can drive a lot of cost, but also is using electricity instead of gas. And what are the impacts of that? And what are the costs of doing that? And what are the benefits of doing that? And cities are driving that. And you don't have a choice. If you're building in that municipality, you have to meet their desire to not have any gas in the building. So from an HVAC perspective and other types of perspectives, that really does change the equation of the way that you build.
It does. And, you know, as an engineer, when I look at the whole energy equation, if I think about a natural, and this isn't to be political, this is just science.
That's right.
Right. When I think about, say, a 96% efficient gas furnace, you're burning natural gas to generate heat. It's doing its job, and you're getting 96% of that out for the very function that you're intending. And that, I think, is a good number. When you then take natural gas, you put it in a turbine to generate electricity at 35% efficiency on the best day ever, ship it across the country with resistive losses, so maybe you lose another 10%, and then you put it in a heat pump to generate heat, I scratch my head and say, well, how did we get here? The numbers just don't support this thesis. And it's not to be a dinosaur in fossil fuels or anything like that. I'm looking at it objectively and saying this doesn't make sense. Now, if your source of power is hydroelectric, awesome. Fantastic. But if you're still burning natural gas to turn a turbine, you're no further ahead. In fact, you're kind of further behind.
Yeah, I don't think you have a disagreement here with us, Victor, but I think you're also a little bit outside of our sweet spot in terms of some of the details of energy supply. Now, part of my career at Forest City, this is going back to 05 to kind of 12, you know, we tried to be pioneers in alternative energy generation and doing power purchase agreements for rooftop space for solar. And that's when you were buying solar. I don't even remember the metrics anymore, but
it's been $5-6 a watt, probably.
I was going to say seven.
Yeah.
And so then we started to look into some large wind farms. We did do some of those on some holdings we had in Hawaii and such. And then by the end, we were doing what we call anaerobic digestion. We actually built 6 anaerobic digesters where we were taking municipal waste and putting it through to create, gas. And we were hoping to find a way to use that to power our building, certainly reduce all the organic waste and wastewater coming out of our buildings. But really there's like that technical question. And we do agree that to have a great building performance that will add value to communities and to investors over time, this is an important aspect, but so is the design. And if you have time, I'd love to talk about the design. And really this is a part of the business that Kevin leads for us. Is I think pretty visionary, if I do say so myself, even the relationship with Matt and just the experience at Forest City that allowed us to take such a bold move. Like you have to have that experience with great architects doing great architecture to commit to doing a building like this, because you have to know and believe fundamentally in your gut and in your heart and head that the returns will be there. So if you have time, I'm sure Kevin would love to talk.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that, because if you take the evolutionary approach, we wouldn't have the iPhone. We'd have a faster fax machine.
Yeah, that's a Ford statement, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Customer, what I wanted, I'd have a faster horse.
That's right.
Yeah. So Kevin, maybe you could talk a bit about One River North, just kind of the concept.
Sure. So we hired Mad Architects, and we were familiar with their work, and we were very interested in the biophilia, which John mentioned already, the organic forms, not everything being rectilinear. Try to move the architecture, particularly the architecture in Denver, to a place that was a more inspiring and really sort of move the needle as we saw it. We really felt that we had a very unique opportunity with the site, with its location in the Rhino District in Denver, which is a arts-oriented, up-and-coming community, lots of great restaurants, art galleries, right next to transit, which is also super important to us. And so we hired Matt, and we went through this process, hired a local architect to be the executive architect, gave his partnership here in Denver. I think what we've achieved has been fairly remarkable. Not to toot my own horn too much, but I really have not seen another building like this, certainly in America, maybe over in Asia. Matt does do a lot of work over there. And then to make it a multifamily apartment building was also a big step. There's a lot of municipal buildings and other buildings that are built by municipalities or by nonprofits or whatever, but this is a for-profit venture. So to be able to work with the architect to in order to make sure that there is some building while also having it push the architecture forward is something which takes a lot of, I think, a lot of passion, a lot of work to get there, much in like what we're talking about with energy, right? It's a trade-off. You make the trade-offs all work at the end of the day in order to make a building that is not only a beautiful building, but successful financially.
Yeah, I love it. Well, gentlemen, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah, probably to go to our website, themaxcollaborative.com. You can see all about our team, our projects, our history, our present, our future. And yeah, we'd love to connect with your listening audience if they have questions or want to collaborate with us in any way. So thanks for having us on, Victor. It's been a blast.
Well, thank you. Well, love what you're doing. And we're definitely kindred spirits. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with John and Kevin Ratner at themaxcollaborative.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.